You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Stroke just went viral.
Straight away from 28 feet, and it's down. Three more for James Harden. And that lead has been cut to five with a timeout to Washington.
Well, I don't know if his left stroke went viral last night, but man, was it good to watch James Harden torch the Washington Wizards. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Can we just all collectively take a moment to just bask in the greatness that is James Edward Harden? I mean, this man, in the fourth game of the season, put up 59 points, 9 assists, and 3 rebounds on 18 of 32 shooting, 6 of 14 from downtown, and at every point where it felt like Washington was getting ready to pull away, where it felt like the Rockets were getting ready to slip, and that the defense just couldn't quite hang with this ridiculous shooting extravaganza by Washington, I'll say. They could not miss. And it wasn't just one or two guys. It felt like the entire team just couldn't miss. And this wasn't quite a defensive issue. This wasn't for lack of effort. There were hands and faces. There were contested shots. Washington was just hitting everything that they threw up. So to have a guy like James Harden on your roster, on your squad, to be your guy, to come out and put up 59 points in just the fourth game of the season. Let's just take a moment and appreciate him. Especially on a night where I'm sure plenty of other Houstonians were crushed by the World Series loss. So maybe we can take a little bit of solace in the fact that there was a team from DC that lost last night. I'm sure it wasn't the one that many of us had hoped would lose, but at least one of them lost, and in spectacular fashion, at the hands of James Harden. Now, it wasn't all just James. Westbrook had a relatively quiet night scoring the ball, didn't even score, I want to say it was 1 point at halftime, or he might not have even scored until the second half. Maybe it was 1 point at halftime, but he finished the game with 17 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists, so another triple-double in the books for Mr. Russell Westbrook. Clint Capella had a pretty strong game. 21 points, 12 rebounds. He was productive, felt good. PJ Tucker had his first off-shooting game. He was just 1 of 4 from downtown, 9 points in 33 minutes. He was putting in work defensively. There were plenty of possessions where he did really make Bradley Beal and others work on that side of the basketball, but he was not the lights out shooting PJ Tucker that we've seen through the first three games of the season. And I knew that wouldn't last. PJ Tucker is not a bona fide 3-point shooter. He's a reliable and consistent 3-point shooter, but he's not a lights out 3-point shooter. So that trend of him shooting whatever it was, like 60 something percent from behind the arc, was bound to fall off. Sucks that it happened in this game where it seemed like everybody else decided to turn it on from downtown. I mean, as a team, the Rockets were 23 of 54. They shot just over, right at about 42.5%. Meanwhile, Washington was absolutely lighting it up. They had Bradley Beal, who went off for a monster game, but as a team, they shot 20 of 36 for 55% from downtown. 55%. That, I don't care who's playing defense on you at that point. It could be the 2000 Spurs with prime Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker under Popovich. If you're shooting 55% from downtown, you're going to put up a lot of points. And I don't really think that the issues last night stemmed as much from defense as they did from just Washington just couldn't miss. There were shots that they were taking that were relatively ill-advised shots. They were almost Rockets-level shots, Rockets-level three-point attempts, and they still didn't crack 50. They only hit 36 threes attempted, but they were draining everything that they threw up, it felt like. Now, there were some openings that they got. There were some issues with Tyson Chandler and his drop coverage versus actually picking up the perimeter player and holding them so that they can't take a wide open three-point shot. So there were some defensive lapses here and there, but overall, the effort was there, and the guys were trying on defense, which is all you can really ask. If the execution is there and people are still making shots, you tip your cap to the offensive player, which is basically what happened last night until the fourth quarter, where the Rockets had to keep clawing their way back. They were down for most of the fourth quarter, and then they clawed their way back in, and they finished with a one-point victory. And that, those final minutes of that game were pretty intense. I know that it's a regular season game, and like I already mentioned, most people were probably watching another sporting event that was taking place here in Houston as opposed to in D.C. against another D.C. team. But this game probably is already going to be in contention for a Game of the Year candidate just because of the absolute offensive firepower on display from not just one team, but from both teams. And the way that it ended was so spectacular. Just those last the last few sequence of plays, just from the attempted coaches challenge to the challenge not being taken, or how's the phrasing of it? The challenge not working? What is it? The challenge did not overturn the foul call. We're gonna go with that. Sorry, it's very early morning right now. So the challenge not working, which led to the Bradley Beal free throws, which I'm sure everybody was sitting there just like me thinking, okay, Beal, just miss one free throw and we're golden. And then James Harden, of course, Mike D'Antoni, known for not taking a timeout in those final few seconds, would rather let James Harden take the open court rather than fighting against a set half-court defense. So ball goes into James Harden, James drives it in, gets the foul call, ices the two free throws, and then, or sorry, I take that back. He doesn't ice the two free throws. I went on autopilot for a second. He ices the first free throw, misses the second, and then Russell Westbrook ties up Rui Hachimura just enough to where a time runs out with 2 seconds left on the clock. That was quite a finish to a really stellar game. A game that the Rockets would have stood no chance in had James Harden not found his shooting stroke. And after the shooting woes that he's faced in the first three games of the season, it's really nice to have our guy back. We'll talk about some other aspects from that game, Russell Westbrook's performance, and others. But first, a quick message from our friends over at Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. You can start your style upgrade now with $30 off of your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering code LOCKEDON at checkout. Again, that is code LOCKEDON at checkout. And we are back in here to keep talking about your Houston Rockets right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Really quickly, before I get into Russell Westbrook, I would just like to point out that James Harden, after his 59-point burger last night, is now averaging 36.8 points on the season. And I claimed at the start of this season that he may very well pass up his 36 points per game metric that he set last season. Now, I was a little skeptical at first making that claim, but I genuinely believe, and I think that this belief is now being cemented, is that with Russell Westbrook here in Houston, Westbrook said plenty of times after the trade that he can do more than just score the ball, that he can impact the game in ways that doesn't require shooting the basketball or scoring the basketball. And that is showing to be very true across these first few games. Now, he has been scoring the basketball, and he has come up a couple times in the clutch when the Rockets have needed him to. But he's also very much capable of impacting the game in other ways. And we've seen it. We've seen it from his passing, setting up his teammates, getting them incredibly wide open looks. Just the level of attention that Russell Westbrook and his explosive, chaotic style of basketball creates, James Harden draws a lot of attention. But again, it's more subtle. It's measured. It's methodical. And it's not as brash or as aggressive or angry as the style that Russell Westbrook plays. And something about that just draws in so much attention that some of these passes that Westbrook is shooting out to the other Rockets players, they are just absolutely wide open. Now, again, if the Rockets hadn't started the year shooting the ball so poorly, Westbrook would probably be averaging somewhere around 13, 14 assists a game right now. Instead, he's not. I don't have the average right in front of me. But, you know, he's hit the triple-double mark a couple times now, and he is impacting the game in significant ways that don't require him to score. Again, just in this game, Westbrook only had 17 points. He was 7 of 16 from the field, so not a great shooting night. He did take 5 three-pointers and only hit one of them, so that's kind of a step in the wrong direction. But he had 10 assists at halftime. He was facilitating the ball all throughout that first half. He was getting people involved. He was generating open looks. And he was doing things that did not require scoring the basketball. And he's done that. Think of the games where he's impacted them by not scoring the ball. Now, I know there have been stretches where he's taken over, especially those first couple games where James Harden just was off. Russ came in and took over. We got the Brody chance at Toyota Center. It was great. But not only was Russ taking over offensively at times, he was impacting the game by his ability to rebound on the defensive side. His energy and activity on the offensive glass has been crucial at times. He has saved a handful of possessions just by being in the right place at the right time. Think of the Washington game just last night. Russell Westbrook jumped in, James Harden missed the layup, and what Russell Westbrook jumped in and got the tip in. It was almost overturned, just barely was the ball off the rim in time for Russell Westbrook to tip the ball back in. I was really worried that bucket wasn't going to count. But he got it, and that's the activity that he brings. Now, he still has some work, he still has to get comfortable with the system. There was a play down the stretch where James was driving straight to the bucket, and instead of sitting at the three-point line, Russell started driving in or started following James into the bucket, and James immediately kicked the ball out to where he thought Russell would be, and it resulted in a turnover. And that's miscommunication, because Russ was expecting James to try and score. James is expecting to have his shooter on the three-point line, even though it is Russ, you know, if Russ has to occupy that space. That is the Rockets' offense. James is expecting to have shooters in certain spots, whether it's in the half court, whether it's on a fast break. If it's a fast break, the shooters know, run to the corners. They know that there's supposed to be somebody in those corners, which is why James can make those passes through traffic. All he has to do is roughly get the ball towards the corner. He doesn't even have to look. He just has to keep his eye on the rim or Capella, his lob threat, and kick the ball out towards one of the two corners because he knows there's a guy there somewhere that is going to be able to catch that pass. So there's still work to be done for Russell Westbrook to get more comfortable in this Houston system. But overall, he has impacted the game in so many different ways without needing to score the basketball. And I think that trend will continue. I think as he and James mesh even more, as he gets more comfortable with the rest of the roster, he's going to find that he doesn't need to take 5 three-point attempts a game. Because we've already seen it. We've seen him specifically pass up wide open looks or pass up mid-range jumpers to get other people a shot. Sorry, just to get other people a shot. I don't know where I was going with that. But he has this uncanny ability to generate looks that, again, James does generate. James generates plenty of offense for Houston. Don't get me wrong. But Russ just does it differently. And Ben and I spoke about it on the most recent pod where because there's that dynamic difference between Russell and James, it creates harder, it makes it harder for defenses to guard them. Because with the dynamic between James Harden and Chris Paul, as good as Chris Paul was, he played a similar style to James. That slower, methodical, kind of old man at the Y type basketball game. And it's not that that style is like easy to defend or anything. It's not. And Chris Paul is still a very, very good player. But essentially, especially last season, when James would sit down and Chris Paul would run the show, you basically had a, I'm going to go ahead and say it, a poor man's version of James Harden. Because Chris Paul was trying to do the same things James Harden was doing, but just he wasn't as successful. He was still hunting for ISOs. He was running the same style of offense as James. Now, Chris would run a few more set plays than James would. He would have his go-to, you know, get the ball on the low block or in that little mid-range on the baseline and run that elevator screen for EG or Gerald Green. And he would run a few more plays, I guess, and more so orchestrate the offense than James. But he was basically a poor man's James last season. Whereas Russ is a completely different player. Just stylistically, top to bottom, completely different player. And so for defenses having to go from James Harden and Russell Westbrook on the court at the same time, so either one of them could be attacking you or running the show, to then just James Harden, to then Russell Westbrook, that's really hard to game plan for. Because you can't just say, oh, well, they're going to be like this, or they're going to play this way, and they're going to play this way for roughly the full 48 minutes. No, because Russ and James do not play similarly at all. They are two completely different types of player. Apart from having the ball in their hands and being high usage players, their styles are completely different. And I've said this before when I was imagining what this roster would look like, and I'm going to say it again. I didn't say it on here. I wasn't doing this yet. But Russell Westbrook and James Harden, to me, a lot feels like the Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant and then the rest of the roster. Because when KD would sit, or when they decided to run the traditional motion offense that the Warriors are known for, it was one style. It felt like one version of their offense. But then they had the other version of their offense, which was literally just KD ISOs, which is a pretty good offense to have. Kevin Durant's arguably one of the greatest scorers of all time. Damn near unguardable. So that's a pretty great offense to have. And it's a pretty great fail-safe when KD's on the floor to be able to try and run a set play or two, and then if it doesn't develop with about 7 to 10 seconds left on the shot clock, you just dump the ball in the post to KD and let him ISO. That's a great system to have, and it's what won them 2 rings in 3 years. So you have that version of offense with Golden State, and then in Houston, you have the dynamic differences between Russell Westbrook and James Harden. And I know, and I bring this up because we all remember when Kevin Durant went out with his injury at the end of Game 5. And the Rockets could not capitalize on it. I take that back. Why am I misremembering this? At the end of Game 6. No? Game 5? It had to have been Game 5. I don't know why I'm misremembering these things. Wow. I have not had my coffee yet. Anyways, when Kevin Durant went out, when Kevin Durant had his original injury that sidelined him for the Rockets series, or the rest of the Rockets series, suddenly the Golden State offense transitioned back to its traditional, its motion system that they were known for pre-KD, because that was an offense that they were all comfortable running. They just moved away from it significantly because having Kevin Durant let you do that. And we saw in that game, suddenly the Rockets were ill-prepared to defend against a brand new offensive scheme. And in the sense that it was brand new because they were so used to guarding everything the way that they had been guarding it, with the abundant amount of switches on defense, all these different things. And suddenly the Rockets could not guard Golden State. They just couldn't hang. And that's because it's really hard to suddenly, in the middle of a game, shift your defensive game plan from what you were expecting to happen into a brand new, or to guard, to account for a brand new style of offense. And that's what James Harden and Russell Westbrook bring to the table as a dynamic duo, is a completely different look, different style of offense when one is on the court versus the other. All right, and we are back for our third and final segment of this recap podcast from the Houston Rockets 159-158 win in DC over the Washington Wizards, the offensive extravaganza that was this game. Now, before I wrap up this episode and complete this segment, I do have to preface it by saying that I am recording this segment Halloween afternoon while I recorded the first two segments earlier this morning. And the reason for that being, I had a technical error when I recorded my final segment this morning. And as I went to go piece these things together, I essentially record them. I record the first one, then the second one, then the third one, and then I stitch them all together, and then I plug the intro in, and then I pop it into the podcast. Easy peasy. Pretty simple. For some reason, when I recorded my segment three this morning, there was an audio error, and I went back to listen to it, and it just was not there. I don't even know what to describe. In all my time working with Adobe Audition, I've never seen something like that happen. So, regrettably, I didn't have the time before having to make it to my day job today to go back and re-record segment three. So I do apologize for having this recap podcast out later than usual. I've been doing my best to have them out early in the mornings, if I do them early in the mornings. And I'm telling you, those 5 a.m. podcasts hit different. But that's when I've been doing them, trying to have them ready so that everybody can listen on their way into work or as you're getting up, getting ready for the day, that type of thing. So again, I do apologize for the delay in getting this one out, but I do hope that the fun little Washington-based intro that I threw together made up for it a little bit. Now, for this final segment, I do want to get into some of the advanced stats for the Houston Rockets so far this season. For all the games played through October 30th, which means all four games for Houston, the Rockets currently rank first in the NBA in offensive rating at 117.7. That's pretty ridiculous. They are 3 points ahead of the LA Clippers. They are a whole 3 points ahead of the Clippers. And granted, that game of 159 points last night in DC certainly helped to boost that rating quite a bit. Their assist percentage, 69.2, which ranks sixth in the league. Assist to turnover ratio, 1.78, which is good enough for number seven. Their true shooting percentage is 58.7, which is good enough for third in the league. And then their pace is 108.75, good enough for second in the league. Now, all of these are offensive stats. They are not doing so hot defensively, and just off the eye test alone, you can see that. The Rockets are second to last in the league in defensive rating at 117.2. They're 29th in the league in defensive rating, just barely ahead of the lowly 1-3 Golden State Warriors, who are bound to miss the playoffs this year after the news of Steph Curry breaking his left hand, which is regrettable for the Warriors. It's regrettable for Curry. You never want to see anybody get injured, even if it's a Warrior, I'll say it. You never want to wish injuries upon anybody. You want everybody to be healthy all the time, and I do regret that Steph Curry won't be playing this season, mainly because I was excited to see Steph Curry have to carry a team like James Harden. the thought of Steph Curry attempting to do what James Harden has done year in and year out in Houston by himself with no other superstars, no other all-stars, no other MVP teammates. And I can't say that anymore. He's got Russell Westbrook. And he did have Chris Paul, who maybe that 17-18 year was pretty great, but definitely not another MVP caliber type player. So it's regretful that we're not going to get to see Steph Curry attempt to carry this understaffed Golden State roster and try to carry them to a top four seed in the West, which everybody thought Steph Curry could do. Everybody thought Steph Curry was going to be able to carry this team and that he was going to be Steph Curry unleashed now that he didn't have to worry about sharing the ball as much with Klay or with KD. And I just never saw it. And now nobody will ever see it. We'll never get the chance to see Steph Curry try and live up to what James Harden has done for years here in Houston. Sorry for that tangent slash rant, but that was something that had been festering for a little while. Anyways, back to our Rockets. Offense was never the question with this team. I don't think offense has ever been the question under Mike D'Antoni's teams. The question has always been defense. And at this point, it's really becoming an issue in the sense that are we going to be able to see this team actually scrape something together defensively? Now, we've seen stretches. We've seen moments where they dial in defensively. But I really do think at this point it's more personnel-based than it is coaching or a philosophy of sorts. Because at the end of the day, when you're trotting out these small ball lineups, you're going to struggle to rebound unless you're rebounding as a team. You're going to struggle to get stops occasionally. And these rotations, the players that Mike D'Antoni is choosing to play over other capable players that are sitting on the bench. Ben McLemore closed out the game for Houston last night. Not Daniel House, not Gary Clark, Ben McLemore. Now, I'm not exactly sure what D'Antoni was going for, and it worked. Ben McLemore hit a shot or two, I want to say, in that fourth quarter, so it worked, but it was still confusing in the sense that D'Antoni has guys on his bench, and it's just mind-boggling the way that his rotations work. And at the end of the day, the Rockets came out with the W, so you can't fault him too much for it. But defensively, when you're giving guys like Tyson Chandler and Ryan Anderson minutes in this type of a game early on, and they're just getting burned left and right because they are complete defensive liabilities. Meanwhile, you have a springy, defensive-minded Gary Clark over there sitting on the bench who could very, very easily slide in and fill that small ball center role where you're still able to play five out. And he can still give you, while playing that small ball center role, he actually gives you some athleticism and some size versus PJ Tucker, who, while he does give you a skilled defender at that five spot or that 4-5 spot. Gary Clark isn't a slouch on defense. Gary Clark is a good defensive player. And so whatever Gary has done to be in Mike D'Antoni's doghouse, whether it's just being young or maybe he said something about why did D'Antoni shave his mustache at practice one day, I don't know. But the fact that D'Antoni refuses to play Gary Clark after playing him early in the season a bit last year, so much so that the Rockets then guaranteed him a contract, gave him a 3-year deal alongside Isaiah Hartenstein, and then had to go back and renegotiate Daniel House's contract into the two-way. Gary Clark showed promise last year, and that's why the Rockets gave him a guaranteed deal. So now you've got Mike D'Antoni, who's not playing Gary Clark, and he's just riding the bench when I feel like he could be an impactful player for this team. Maybe it's just because it's the early season. Maybe Mike is still messing with certain lineups, playing around with rotations, trying to see what may or may not work. But if he's doing that, then why hasn't he given Gary Clark a chance yet? Granted, sure, we're only 4 games in. And so there's plenty more games to be played. There's plenty more basketball to be had. And maybe his plans are to work Gary Clark in somewhere down the line. But when it seems that the Rockets' biggest issues are size and athleticism and energy, really energy, and Ben McLemore did provide that last night. That I will give him. He was hustling, he was sticking to his guys, and he was playing his role beautifully offensively, which is literally just stand on the three-point line and be ready to shoot the ball when it comes your way. It's not hard to slide into the Rockets' offense. All you have to do is be ready to shoot the ball. You have to know how to find your spots on the court, whether it's in transition or in the half court, and you have to be ready for a pass from James or Westbrook or whoever else may throw the ball your way. And that's really it. It's pretty easy to slot into the Rockets' offense as a role player. And defensively, all you have to do is play with energy. If you play with hustle and energy, then you are going to be better than the average defender. As long as you're paying attention to your man and playing with hustle and energy, then you're going to be a average to slightly above average defender. And Ben McLemore did that last night. So kudos to Mike D'Antoni for digging deep on his bench and finding a guy to close out the game. It wasn't Daniel House, though, which makes you wonder, is Daniel House in the doghouse with Mike D'Antoni? Oh, goodness. Is Daniel House in the doghouse? That was a very unintended play on words. But again, whether it's their youth, because it's not just Daniel House and it's not just Gary Clark. We saw it with Clint Capella, too. Whether it's their youth or whether it's something behind the scenes that we don't know about yet, Mike D'Antoni has had some interesting, I'm not going to say questionable, because the Rockets are 3-1 now, but they're 3-1 due to a lot of heroics from Westbrook and a lot of situations that really could have gone 50-50. This Wizards game could have very easily landed in the hands of Washington, and the Rockets could be sitting at 2-2 right now. Because the Rockets, as currently, I don't want to say as currently constructed, but as currently performing, the best offense in the NBA, but the second to last or second to worst defense in the NBA, they have the makings of a 500 team. They have the makings of a ball club that is going to go 500 on this season, because you just absolutely cannot live with a net rating of 0.5 or whatever it is. So the net rating, the difference between their offensive rating and their defensive rating. They are giving up a wild amount of points every game. And while you're scoring a lot of points every game, you still need a higher net rating. You still need a better point differential between what you are scoring and what other teams are scoring on you. The good teams have high net ratings. The Warriors, the dominant Warriors the last few years, have had high net ratings. And the Rockets have time to work themselves there. The gigantic game from Washington definitely skews that metric a little bit for Houston. But even before that game, the Rockets were scoring the lights out of the ball, and they were getting scored on. And that's how basically every game has been up until this point. So it'll be interesting to see how they shape up defensively moving forward, and whether or not they shape up defensively moving forward. We said it at the top of the season in a couple of the different preview podcasts that we did, where there's no question the Rockets are going to be a top three offensive team this season, probably just the best offensive team this season. When you have the likes of Russell Westbrook and James Harden on your team, that bodes very well. Based on our limited sample size, these first four games, this Rockets offense is going to be a thing of beauty. It really is. When James Harden has it going, when Russell Westbrook is facilitating the way that he does, and when the Rockets shooters are hitting their shots at even an average clip, this team will be lethal. But it remains to be seen whether they can actually shore up their defense enough to be contenders. You really can't be a contender, even if you're the best offensive team in the league. You cannot be a contender if you're floating around the middle of the pack defensively. They really do. You can get by if you're the best offensive team in the league and you can get your defense into that 10 to 12 range. You can probably make it by, and you can bank on your offense to win you games, and you can plan for, yeah, we're going to have some defensive lapses. We're going to have stretches where we can't defend at all and other teams are going to score at will on us, but we're just going to bank on the fact that we score more than they do. We're going to put up more points than you do, and we're going to get stops at key points throughout the game and put just enough points on the board that we're going to walk away with the W. You can do that if you get that defense closer to the number 10 rank in the league, the number 10 spot. But right now, second to last in the league, just ahead of the Golden State Warriors, is not where we want to see the Rockets even a month from now. Again, we have a small sample size to work with, so things are not super concerning at this very moment, especially with the score of the Wizards game impacting that metric so much. But even before the Wizards game, the Rockets were not faring very, very well on the defensive end at all. With that said, it was a hell of a game. It was a good basketball game. And even for somebody who enjoys defense as much as I do, offensively, that game was just a clinic. Watching shots go in left and right like that, as painful as it was to watch the Wizards hit so many shots, it was such a fun basketball game. And sometimes I think we maybe lose track of that when we're so caught up in the wins and the losses and the stats and this and that and the other thing. Sometimes it's really nice to just appreciate a basketball game, a good basketball game. And there's so many of those throughout the NBA. There's so many of those every year. I mean, a few that come to mind from last season, there was the Derrick Rose kind of redemption game where he scored, 50-something? It was either 50 or 50-something. And that was a beautiful basketball game. Then you had the, It was the Pistons and 76ers, I want to say, last year, maybe, where Blake Griffin went off for like 50-something points. And there's games every year, multiple times throughout the year, where you just sit back and just as a fan of basketball, not even just a fan of your team, not a fan of the Houston Rockets, not a fan of the Warriors or the Wizards or whoever you may be following, most of you following the Rockets, I would hope, you just sit back and you think, wow, that was such a great game. That game was fun to watch, and you just get lost in the game. And for me, I got to listen to the first half of basketball via Matt Thomas's radio call and then watch the second half and then went back and watched the first half on a recording later on. But just getting lost in that game, the way it was being played, the pace at which the teams were playing, and how well each team was playing. Because a lot of the shots that the Wizards were hitting were well defended. The shots were just going in, and that's some of the best, that's some of the most fun basketball where you're sitting there thinking, how is this guy hitting this shot? How are these shots going in? And then the Rockets had a lot of those themselves. There were a lot of points where a Rockets player would hit a shot and you think, wow, that came out of nowhere. You know, early in the shot clock or, you know, a drive to the bucket with a hand in his face, anything like that. Now, the Rockets did have their fair share of wide open shots last night. They are doing a great job at getting wide open looks. And at the end of the day, all it takes is hitting your shots. Guys like PJ Tucker, Daniel House, Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, all the role players for the Rockets, they are going to get so many wide open shots this year at the hands of Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Those guys will generate so many different wide open looks for all those role players, and all their job is to hit those shots. And if they do that, this Rockets team is going to be hard to beat, with the caveat of the fact that they need to up their defense just a bit. Now with that, for this Thursday afternoon now, this is where we will break. As always, thank you for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all going down. I'm on there, at JT Gatlin. Ben is on there, at Ben DuBose. And the show is on there, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's always Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. In general, it's really just a way for you to let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts at, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they are published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Thursday, for this spooky Thursday, October 31st, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.